made her heart break to hear it, because she knew Malik couldn't win forever. "Don't come to Boston, Rojan. Don't you dare come." But no matter how many times she ordered her sister not to leave their home in Tehran, it made no difference. Nothing could have stopped Rojan. Nothing would stop Vienna.
"Why not now?" Vienna persisted. "You're going there yourselves anyway. Take me with you. I want to volunteer to try to receive a shadow."
"Not now."
"I want to volunteer, Dad."
"Not now," he shouted.
Vienna didn't speak again, but she didn't put the shoe down either. She looked at Zhang, begging, but Naz was the one to help her.
"Malik," she said to him.
He finally looked up from his hands.
"I just thought if I waited a little bit..."
He trailed off.
"I know,"
Naz said. She did know. She would have done the same thing if it was Rojan who was shadowless.
"But if you try to wait Vienna out until she doesn't remember, that won't mean that you can decide for her. It'll just make it wrong."
Malik buried his head in his arms. Naz reached out and put her hand on his big, slouching shoulder.
"You have to let her do this, before she forgets she wanted to. Don't take away the last bit of freedom she still has from her."
Davidia was already beside the silent, seated body at the altar, talking quietly with the surface of the wall. As they crested the hill, Naz saw Gajarajan's ears ripple slightly, like an animal catching a sound on the breeze.
"Vienna," he said warmly, "it's an honor to meet you at last. I'm glad you came."
It was the first time Vienna had seen the leader of their city. She stared open-mouthed at him, at the blindfolded man, unmoving, almost unaware, almost non-living, and at its shadow behind on the wall, man-like, the same rough size, with the same motions, but not shaped like a man at all.
"Hello,"
she finally whispered. Malik was overcome with the urge to protect her, and thought what was in her face was fear. But Naz could see what she was thinking. It wasn't fear. It was hope. That was the reason she had wanted to volunteer, to give Gajarajan permission to work his dangerous magic and possibly fail, without fear, because she'd asked him to try knowing the chances. Naz's hands twitched, wanting to hold Vienna and cry, but she wouldn't want it. Not from a person she no longer remembered she knew. More than that, it wasn't Naz's place. Malik was here, and the grief belonged to him, not her. Vienna was not her little sister.
"I know it's been a difficult time for you, but I'm very pleased you've come to share what you remember about transcendence with the Eight," the elephant said.
"That's not why I came," Vienna blurted out.
Malik stepped protectively in front of her, but she leaned out from behind him again.
"I mean, I'll tell you everything I remember, of course. Anything that will help," she stammered, moving around her father completely to face Gajarajan. "But that wasn't the reason I came."
The elephant shifted on the wall.
"What is the reason, then?"
Naz could feel Malik about to speak again. She reached out and grabbed his arm firmly to stop him. Not a shake, but a hug. His other hand appeared on top of hers unconsciously. Naz squeezed as hard as she could.
"I want to volunteer," Vienna said, "to be the next shadowless who tries to rejoin with the shadow. I know you're close, but you're afraid to hurt anyone else until you're sure you can do it. But you're never going to be sure unless you keep trying. I want you to try with me."
Naz waited, trembling. Before them, the wall darkened as Gajarajan slowly grew, his ears unfurled, trunk lifted in a muscular, graceful S. Naz didn't know if he was happy or insulted. He was just terrifying. At last, his trunk curled to his chin.
"You're very brave," he said.
"Does that mean you'll do it?"
"Yes," the elephant said.
Malik started as if he'd been hit with something, but before he could argue, Gajarajan spoke again.
"But I need something from you in return."
Davidia glanced at the wall from where she stood.
"She's a child," she said softly to him.
"She's a shadowless,"
Gajarajan replied. And the only shadowless that seen transcendence with her own eyes. Nuz wanted to look at Malik's face, but she couldn't move. All she could do was keep watching the huge shadow spread before them.
Vienna,
Malik began.
Tell me the price,
Vienna said to the wall.
Vienna.
Malik took her by the shoulders.
Honey,
he pleaded, voice breaking.
I accept,
she said fearlessly, staring into the dark shape of the elephant.
Hear the price first,
Gajarajan said. Vienna nodded.
Name it then.
Become one of the eight.
They all cried out in disbelief.
You're joking,
Nuz said incredulous.
I'm afraid not. In fact, we may not succeed without her.
But you have eight already.
We do, but perhaps not the right eight. Transcendence is strong, and Vienna knows them better than any of the current members.
Gajarajan looked down from the wall.
It will cost her memories to take one of the eight's places for the fight, yes. But it could also be the difference between winning and losing this last battle.
Beside Nuz, Zhang shook his head.
Is that what you tell the eight every time you need them to do something for you?
He asked.
Everything you tell them to voluntarily forget?
I would never force anyone to do something they didn't want to do, Gajarajan said.
Each of the eight is here willingly. They want to help the city.
His ears waved, big, gentle fans.
You've seen what's out there. Without their help, New Orleans would be the same as every other place, or worse. How do you think the wall that keeps us safe was built? Where the first food came from before what we had planted grew? How do you think all of the dangerous little misrememberings are all fixed so quickly?
Even if it means slowly dying for it,
Nuz countered.
That's a high price to pay.
Is it, though?
Gajarajan asked. Any one of you also could have died fighting the Reds to save your home in the Iowa. What the eight do here is the same thing, except once I figure out how to give them shadows again and make the shadows stay. He seemed to smile. In fact, the price you might have paid for the same goal was far greater then. Vienna touched her father's arm.
Gajarajan's right, Dad, she said. I might lose something, but if we don't win against transcendence, I'm going to lose everything anyway. All of us are.
If the situation was so dire, why didn't you say anything before?
Malik asked, barely controlled. Gajarajan shrugged softly with his ears.
I told you, I would never have sought her out, because to join the sanctuary must be a free choice, not a forced one.
Nuz didn't want to agree with him, but she could feel the defeat already beginning to set in. It didn't matter that it was Vienna, their Vienna. It wouldn't even have mattered if it was Rojan. Vienna knew the shadow was right. Without Vienna's help, they might not win. She had to do it, even if it meant that she would have to sacrifice who knew how many of her precious last memories to save them all. Orlando Zhang. Dawn seemed to come earlier than usual the next morning. As the sky slowly brightened, Zhang stood in the guard tower with Amadi, Malik, and Gajarajan, both the shadow and its body, which was seated behind them in the corner of the small enclosed platform. Far below, the world was very different than it had been when the sun set. Outside the city, and stretching to cover most of the long bridge over Lake Pontchartrain, the ground was blanketed in white, as if they had woken up to snow. Transcendence had arrived.
I wonder what they did to the death kites overnight,
Amadi mused quietly. None of them replied. Whatever they had done, it had been effective. There was no sign of even one of them now. No vast, colorful shapes catching the light. No silent, angular shadows drifting over the water and fragrant grass, waiting for prey.
We should tell the eight,
Malik said tensely, glancing across the city toward the first great hall, where the shadowless waited inside.
They should know. Every bit of tactical information.
He trailed off as if realizing how far it was.
Zhang hadn't thought of phones for a long time, until he realized he'd put his hand into his pocket as if to retrieve one. Gajarajan glanced at them for a moment, considering. The wall of the tower was suddenly brighter, containing only pale morning light, and then, just as suddenly, the familiar gray pattern was cut back into it. The elephant ruffled his ears. "I've informed them," he said.
"Thank you," Malik said, surprised. "That was... I appreciate it."
Gajarajan shrugged.
"To move using light doesn't require a similar effort to walking. It made more sense for me to go than any of you."
"Or him," Amadi said, indicating the blindfolded body sitting quietly in the corner. The man made no move to acknowledge he'd heard her. "Why did you bring him?" she asked.
"I'm not sure," Gajarajan said. "It isn't very useful, is it? Better dexterity, as it's a solid form, but that's about it."
Zhang couldn't help but shake his head. To be talking about a human body in such a way, especially his own, it was hard not to be entertained sometimes at how strangely Gajarajan understood people. More often than not, he seemed to Zhang more like a robot than an elephant, or the shadow of one, a disembodied intelligence that regarded their flesh like cars, interchangeable models. Zhang had always thought of the great gray animals as sort of like humans, really, with families, personalities, identities, just bigger and with tusks. But he supposed that was simply his attempt to understand them. Maybe that wasn't how they were at all. Amadi was leaning cautiously over the edge of the tower, staring into the vast white.
"What are they... doing?" she whispered.
"Praying," Gajarajan said.
Zhang looked at him sharply.
"Praying to what?"
"Their leader." The shadow edged forward slightly as if to also get a better look. A shadowless at their center.
Madness, Zhang thought.
An army of shadowed people led by a shadowless who wanted to remove all human shade from the world. Against a council of shadowless, led by a living shadow, who wanted to give everyone back their dark twin.
"Well, 8-1 is good odds," Malik said as hopefully as he could.
Zhang knew he was wondering the same thing the rest of them were. Why transcendence needed only one?
"Don't fear," Gajarajan said as if answering his thoughts. "The 8 are powerful too."
"Why 8? Amadi asked. "Yoshikawa said it's the strongest number. But why?"
8 is the number of verses about Surya in the Rig Veda," the shadow answered.
"Surya?"
"The god of the sun,"
he replied as if it meant something to them. Just then there was a small ripple across the alabaster army below. Something was about to begin.
"The 8 are ready?" Zhang asked, resisting the urge to run, to hide anywhere he could find.
Gajarajan nodded.
"Vienna will lead memories related to transcendence, knowing most what they look like and how they act, and Downtown and Curly will lead any memories related to defending New Orleans. The rest shall harmonize, to help shoulder the burden of forgetting and intensify the strength of each act."
Downtown and Curly. Zhang had heard their names from the other New Orleanians from time to time, along with a few others who were no longer there. Marie, Buddy, and a shadowed doctor named Dr. Avantakar. Of the original 8, Downtown and Curly were the only two left who still served. The others had entered their endless wait long ago, and now remained in body only. No mind. Everything had been spent, down to the last recollection. To know that two of the original 8 were with Vienna gave Zhang hope their plan might just work. She didn't really know what she was doing yet, but the 8 did, and they were intensely powerful. After all, they had been part of the 8 that had remembered the very first and still the most massive work of magic, the reimagining of the deadly hurricane that almost destroyed New Orleans into the gigantic water wall beneath them. Zhang watched the crystalline surface shimmer as the sun struck it. He understood it now, if unguided, how hard it would be to resist the urge to want to forget again thereafter, to do things even more incredible.
Easy, Gajarajan said to Malik as the white shifted further. This is crazy, he replied, fists clenched. Look at how many there are.
Easy, the shadow repeated. This isn't your battle.
Gajarajan had gathered everyone in New Orleans last night and reiterated that they were not to fight, that the eight would do it for them. All the rest of them had to do was run to the center of the city on Vienna's command and stay there no matter what. Whether Transcendence was inside or outside the gates, whether they were attacking or not. Simple enough, Zhang thought. Simple and terrifying. But where were the eight? They still hadn't arrived, and the army below was beginning to shift in waves like a great ivory tide.
They're moving, Amidi warned. Her fingers spasmed, wishing there was a bow to grab for.
She was struggling as much as Zhang was to place all their safety in someone else's hands. Zhang turned around again, but the far hill in front of the sanctuary was still empty.
Where were the eight?
There she is, Malik gasped.
They all looked to where he was pointing. Across the city, Zhang could see eight small figures moving out from the first great hall into the sun. From this distance, and with no shadows, they almost looked like they were floating.
Vienna, downtown, Curly, from the land of lakes, Skinny, old-timer, chef, survived the storm, Zhang said to himself.
He tried to picture each one of them as they headed toward the city gates beneath him, to make himself believe that they could do it, that whatever their plan was, it was going to work.
Vienna, downtown, Curly, from the land of lakes, Skinny, old-timer, chef, survived the storm.
Gajarajan,
Vienna said when they had reached the ground below the watchtower's ladder. They stood facing the gate in a pyramid formation, Vienna in front, downtown and Curly behind her, and then the remaining five behind them.
It's time, downtown called up to them. Something is stirring.
A chill went through Zhang as he looked backward at the rest of New Orleans. Everything was empty and still. He knew that all the shadowed and shadowless were hiding just inside doors and windows and behind walls, ready to do what seemingly suicidal thing Vienna was about to ask for. But the sight of the city so utterly dead was frightening.
His name will be Lucius, Gajarajan said to Vienna. Their leader.
Zhang had no idea how Gajarajan knew it. Vienna nodded gently, as if from far away. They watched the white waves begin to split from one endless alabaster surface into hundreds, thousands of small fluttering shapes, men and women covered from head to toe in their strange white robes. Maybe they were all hoping they would forget, because they couldn't even see who they each were anymore.
False prophet!
Someone finally called from deep within Transcendence's lines.
Show yourself!
Zhang nearly cried out when their gate trembled in response. Amidi clutched his arm with fingernails like razor blades, as Malik forced himself to obey Gajarajan's nod to crank the wheel to open the huge doors.
Why are we doing this? Zhang hissed. Why open it for them?
But the shadow beside them said nothing. Zhang clutched the railing of the tower's low wall until his knuckles turned white. Transcendence seemed equally surprised that they were opening the city to them. The first row lowered their weapons uncertainly. From inside, the eight stared them down. At last, one white shape pushed through the many to the front.
Transcended ones, we greet you.
The man bowed, and his shadow copied.
If you join us now, we can offer you protection during the battle, and then mercy afterward. You will be accepted into Transcendence as honored guests.
We wish to speak to Lucius, Vienna said.
The man in white paused. He was close enough that Zhang could just make out his eyes from the tower as they narrowed suspiciously.
Your own leader doesn't show himself,
What makes you think you have the right to demand to speak to ours?
The one who gathers has a shadow, Vienna said coldly.
She gestured to the towering, shimmering height of the living storm bound to stillness on either side of the gate, something one still bound to his dark twin could never make.
Who do you think is really in charge here?
The man in white finally bowed again. It was impossible to tell, but Zhang thought he might have been smiling beneath all the veils and layers.
Our leader asked to meet you before we even arrived. I am happy to have found you worthy of his audience.
Zhang braced as their crowd parted around another shifting section of itself. A group emerged, tightly clustered. At least 10 disciples surrounded their great shadowless messiah, a tall and almost handsome man of indeterminate age. The front two on either side held on to him as they walked by linking their arms with his at the elbows, like human chains, trying to keep him from utterly destroying the city until they're ready, Zhang thought grimly. He was also draped in the same robes, but more layers of them, and longer, and was the only one with his head completely uncovered. Lucius. It was the look on the Shadowless's face that caught Zhang. It was nothing like how the ones in Gajarajan's sanctuary seemed. Their gazes were absent, but not angry, not afraid, as if their memories had simply gone off somewhere else for a time and might return. It was even different from what he'd seen on the faces of the Red King and the Reds. That had been greed and rage, twisted out of control without memory. Lucius was something far worse. He was nothing at all. Emptiness that could never be filled. His eyes were not simply dimmed or distant. They were dead. The escort of disciples came to a stop in front of the first man that had been speaking for them all. Lucius stared at the eight for several seconds, studying them in silence. From above, Zhang studied him back intensely. There was something almost familiar about him, almost like a face he'd met in another time, another world. But he could not place him. The disciples clung to him, practically melding onto his body, their shadows twisted behind them into a grotesque mass.
You lead the people of New Orleans? Lucius finally asked. The voice was disarmingly quiet and smooth. A city of shadowed people?
We have many shadowless as well, Vienna said. New Orleans welcomes all who want to remember instead of forget.
Once a man transcends, he cannot return, Lucius replied.
Vienna grinned.
You're wrong.
The disciples around Lucius pulled tighter and Zhang flinched, but nothing happened. Lucius only nodded.
You haven't been shadowless for very long, he finally said. You'll see.
I have seen, Vienna replied. When I heard the rumors, I didn't believe most of them either. But then I arrived in New Orleans and—
You came to New Orleans? Lucius asked. You didn't already live here?
From Washington, D.C., Vienna answered.
Lucius's eyes narrowed as he searched the incomplete archives of his mind for information that was attached to any of those words.
On your way, you didn't see a very large thing to ride in, a large vehicle, did you?
A large vehicle? Vienna frowned. No, there's no fuel anymore.
Oh.
Lucius glanced down for a moment, at the grass that tickled the billowing hems of his robe. Zhang waited for something more, or the reason he'd asked, but Lucius said nothing. He simply waited. But for what? The longer Zhang watched, the stranger the scene in front of him seemed. Lucius was there, as Gajarajan had said he would be, and he was shadowless, and transcendence clearly worshipped him. But everything felt as if it was tilted 1 degree off center,
as if Zhang was the one who wasn't remembering something that he should have understood, instead of all the shadowless.
We came in horse carriages, Vienna offered, as if that might have been what he meant.
But Lucius only shook his head and waved a hand to dispel the words. Never mind, he said. Then, even more quietly, I can't remember why I asked.
Enough talk, the first transcendence disciple, the one who had been appointed to speak, growled to the eight. He pointed at Vienna. Join us now or after we destroy your false prophet and free you.
From the corner of his eye, Zhang saw the shadow of the elephant shift on the wall beside him.
Remember, don't fight them, he whispered. Not a single one.
And then he stretched out of the tower in a flash and spread himself across the earth, just to the left of the eight. His shape burned starkly against the grass like black fire. A shadow with no body. A cry of horror went up from the fluttering alabaster army as the closest one saw it.
The blasphemer! The man in white shrieked. The monstrous one!
The city echoed with their screams. The disciples around Lucius cowered, howling, and even Lucius looked momentarily stunned at the unnatural, impossible sight. In the tower with Zhang, Malak, and Amadi, the one who gathers body continued to sit placidly out of sight.
Destroy them!
One of the disciples cried. White surged toward the gates, toward the city, a deafening avalanche. Vienna raised her hand straight above her head. The signal.
Now!
Zhang slid down the ladder and ran before he could think better of it. Amadi and Malak thudded onto the grass after.
Now!
Zhang cried again to help relay her call, but he didn't need to. She had forgotten something. Something that made her voice audible everywhere in the city at once. All around them, every New Orleanian not sequestered in the first great hall was pouring onto the deserted streets, running as fast as they could for the open plaza of the city where the eight waited, moments from being surrounded by transcendence. Zhang, Amadi, and Malak crashed into another waterfall of people exploding out of adjoining street and were sucked into the current. He looked for Amadi, but all he could see were arms, the backs of heads, hair whipping in the wind. Don't fight, he tried to remind himself as he felt the panic rise. They all sprinted straight for the swarming white and crashed into their lines.
Zhang!
Amadi screamed. Zhang turned around frantically, but he couldn't see her. Not see. Tell apart. Because everyone suddenly had the same face.
What the?
The person next to him said then as a shocked silence suddenly fell across both armies. Vienna had changed all of them. Thousands of New Orleanians, so that they all looked just like transcendence. Everyone was now wearing the exact same pale swirling robes, veiled to the tops of their noses. Zhang looked at the man standing next to him, and to both his horror and exhilaration, couldn't tell who he was at all. He had no idea if he was New Orleanian or transcendence. He was almost too awestruck to wonder what it had cost Vienna.
Mix with them, someone from the New Orleans side cried out then. Mix with them so we're too intertwined for them to attack. Retreat,
a transcendence general yelled back.
Retreat!
People began pushing and yelling, trying to move but afraid to injure anyone in case they were facing an ally instead of an enemy. The crowd surged in multiple directions, but it was too late. All of Transcendence's army had thrust itself through the city gate in its rage at having seen Gajarajan's monstrous form. The iron doors clanged shut behind them as they struggled to peel away from the disguised New Orleanians. He was useful after all, Zhang realized as he looked up at the tower, where Gajarajan was no doubt back inside, and where his body had just finished spinning the wheel to close the gate. Everyone stood frozen at the realization that both groups were now trapped together inside the city.
Zhang?
Someone called in the momentary pause.
Amadi!
Zhang hissed.
Amadi!
He squeezed around confused shapes. Everyone was still coming out of shock.
Amadi!
but the white-robed figure he bumped into next in the jostling crowd wasn't her. Lucius. Zhang pulled back in terror, but the shadowless simply stared impassively at him as the disciples clutching his arms floundered, trying and failing to swat away anyone that got too close. It was equally plausible that Zhang was shocked because he was a New Orleanian, as because he was one of Transcendence's own who had accidentally just touched the hand of his god. But the fact that the not knowing didn't seem to trouble Lucius was unnerving. Was he really so powerful that even the instinct to flinch against the possibility of a knife in his gut was gone? But then the disciple on Lucius's left tugged on his elbow until the shadowless turned toward him, the one on the right following to move deeper into the crowd. Zhang watched, transfixed. He understood suddenly then why everything had seemed so strange before. Lucius's dead expression, the way the disciples had clung to him as they walked up to speak with the eight, they hadn't so much been holding Lucius back as holding him there. Zhang looked at the shadowless again just as Lucius's pale, resigned eyes met his own. He had never been their leader, or at least if he had been, he wasn't any more. He was their hostage. Lucius, Zhang started to say to him. He reached out as the disciples turned, their knives emerging swiftly from their robes.
Wait! Marie!
Downtown and Curly shouted at that same moment over the din. From above, everywhere, there was a deafening, groaning whine, like a great beast awakening to the sound of its name. Who was Marie? Zhang thought frantically, and remembered that she was one of the original eight, at the same moment that he realized from where the sound had come. She was the one who had known the most about hurricanes. The water hit the city in a deafening boom. Everything happened on instinct. Zhang closed his eyes and squeezed his nose and mouth shut to hold his breath before the wave pummeled him. The freed, flooding storm enveloped everything, surging with the starving rage of a tsunami. They did it, Zhang reeled. Downtown and Curly. The hurricane. The eight had lured the entire Transcendence army into a trap, and then freed the storm from its imprisoned shape, unleashing it directly inward onto New Orleans. His lungs began to burn. Everywhere the sounds of bodies being thrown against the ground, of air being strangled out of lungs and cold liquid glugging in, assaulted him. Zhang fought desperately to keep his last gasp inside his lungs, but he was still... He opened his eyes. Over and over the waves crashed, towering, inescapable as they filled the city. Zhang waited to be consumed by the deafening roar, but every droplet curved sharply around him. He looked down at his false white robes, the grass beneath his feet, amazed. There wasn't a single inch of him that was wet. Through the spiraling flood, he caught sight of others crouching bewildered like himself, each encased in a narrow tunnel of air. New Orleanians. All of them safe. He stared in disbelief. The hurricane knew the difference between the ones it had protected as the wall and their enemies. Above, around, the war was being decided. Zhang watched in stunned, horrified wonder as other white shapes thrashed in slow motion, suspended in a current of bubbles and clear, sparkling death. No matter how hard they kicked for any twisting, curved surface, the hurricane simply pulled them back in, like fish on a line. Even though the New Orleanians were all veiled, Zhang stumbled between the swirling columns to the cowering shape he thought was Amadi, and was right. He held her, as the other white shapes each wrung themselves a final, agonized time, and then at last all floated still, veils spread like graceful fins. Wind? Maybe fog? Dividia said softly. Gajarajan nodded slowly.
Perhaps. The eight will know the right thing to use for a new wall when it comes.
Zhang rubbed his face. The hurricane had finally spent the rest of the destruction it had meant to wreak before it had been bound,
and what was left of it was draining slowly around the closed gate, around either open side of it, since there were no longer any walls, and into Lake Pontchartrain. Everywhere New Orleanians wandered, bewildered but alive. Downtown and Curly's magic had managed to spare not just their people, but even the buildings of the city as well. The only lingering sign there had been a storm at all was the faint drizzle that now hung in the air, coating everything in a misty sheen. And all of the drowned bodies. The ground looked covered in snow again. Only this time Transcendence wouldn't ever move, until New Orleans burned or buried them. It was over. John could hardly believe it, even as he saw the destruction with his own eyes. It was finally over. Transcendence was gone.
"Well, I hope the right thing comes quickly," Amity said. "It's going to be much harder to defend the city until then."
"I think the worst is over," Gajarajan replied. He turned back to the quiet battlefield.
"We'll be all right until the Eight can devise something new."
Zhang looked at the elephant.
"Do you think..."
He trailed off.
"I don't know either," Gajarajan said.
Zhang nodded. And they would probably never know, he guessed. Whether Lucius didn't have enough power to stop, or at least dampen the drowning wall as it choked the life out of his disciples, or if he'd been able, but didn't try. If he had wanted to be free so badly that he let Downtown and Curly plunge Transcendence's army into a watery grave, and himself.
"Vienna!"
Malik cried. Zhang turned around to see him take off running, white robes flapping damply in the warm, humid air. Another white shape put its arms out as he swept it up in a crushing hug.
"Dad,"
she said softly.
"Oh, thank God,"
Malik whispered. Zhang felt his throat tighten as he watched. He had known that feeling all too well once. "Thank God it wasn't me, whatever was taken from you. Thank God you still remember me." He felt Amadee's hand on his arm, a tentative, nervous touch. He leaned into it.
"Did you see?"
Vienna asked softly as Malik brought her over by the hand. The other seven of the Eight trailed slowly behind, as if dazed. Gajarajan moved gently between each of them, his dark form propped up directly against their bodies instead of against something facing them. Perhaps that was the way he embraced? Zhang wondered.
"Did you see what I did?"
Zhang held out the front of his white robe.
"I did see," he said.
It was too incredible to believe, to try to comprehend that Vienna, who on some days was still so innocent it seemed as if she was more child than young adult, had worked magic across an entire city and saved thousands of lives in an instant.
"I think it's safe to say that you are, without doubt, the best soldier the Iowa has ever or will ever have."
Malik and Amity laughed. Malik almost hysterically. Vienna started at the outburst and put out a hand on instinct as if to bat away the sound. Malik saw it as he wiped his eyes. His smile was gone. He hugged her again. "Oh no," Zhang realized.
"It's okay," he said to her. "The Iowa isn't important. Don't worry, it doesn't matter. You can forget that."
"It seems like it was important," she said, brow furrowed. "That place."
"You're here now," Zhang said. "That's more important."
She looked up at him.
"And you... I know that I know you, but not from where. Are you from the Iowa too?"
"Yes, I was Emmanuel's friend."
"That's it,"
she nodded, having finally found something to grasp onto.
"Ori."
Zhang chuckled for a moment. He hadn't heard it in such a long time. His first name sounded almost wrong now. But something strange had happened to Gajarajan. He'd snapped from where he was against the grass beside the rest of the Eight, to the picket fence in front of Zhang and Vienna in a blinding instant, as if someone had flicked on a light.
"His name is Zhang," the elephant said.
There was something odd in the tone,
suspicion, or a question.
Zhang?
Vienna asked, confused.
Yes. Zhang, Gajarajan repeated. Not Ori.
It is Ori, Zhang said to him. My first name is Orlando. Zhang is my surname. At the Iowa, it was just something we did for morale, like real soldiers, going by our surnames.
He nodded encouragingly at Vienna.
She forgot the one, but she still remembers the other. You still know who I am.
Vienna nodded. I remember.
Gajarajan was silent against the fence for a long time, lost in thought. Why this had struck the shadow so intensely baffled Zhang, but almost never did he understand why the things that mattered to Gajarajan mattered and why others didn't. He turned to Amadi, planning to leave the elephant to his strange brooding thoughts. The great dark ears were folded, perfectly still for the first time ever, Zhang noticed then. The sight was even more unsettling than when he warped into impossible shapes and heights.
I didn't know that, Gajarajan finally murmured, almost as if in awe.
The One Who Gathers. Gajarajan returned to the sanctuary late that night. There had been the New Orleanians to tend to, and then the dead. Then finally the Shadowless who had won the battle for them all. They were not as bad as Gajarajan feared, but for survived the storm. It was time to let him retire from the Eight, to begin his wait in the first great hall, while Gajarajan looked for a suitable shadow. He had done as much as he could, and it was wrong to ask him to forget more. There would be others to take his and Vienna's place. Tomorrow Gajarajan would go and bring Malik's brave daughter there, to the second great hall, as they had agreed. But there was something else to do first. The moon was almost full, casting silver light down onto the sanctuary, every corner of it reachable without having to move his body from the altar. Gajarajan draped across the open roof, looking down into the second hall, where a small shape rested on a simple bed. He shifted forward and was inside then, against the floor, silent. The rhythmic, shallow sounds of slumber continued from under the blankets, undisturbed. The shadow rose up against the far wall, where a table sat. He studied the things on top. A change of fresh clothes, instructional objects he'd brought in, a leaf, a dried flower, a spoon, and the patient's personal effects at the time of admission to the Great Hall. Some had many in the earlier days. This one had brought hardly any at all. Just one thing, in fact. The thing from which he'd been able to take the first shadow that had ever fit back onto a shadowless. The night Dr. Avantikar had died, the second Great Hall was empty. It had been that way for weeks, because Gajarajan had failed so many times and was afraid to try again, to torture another shadowless with the hope of recovery, only to have it fail or drive them insane, or kill them. It was what they'd been arguing about in the first place that drove her to such a risky move, to go outside the gate, into the dark with the death kites. Davidia's guards brought both Dr. Avantikar and her shadowless rescue in without dying themselves somehow. The death kite screeches faded as they slammed the doors shut behind them.
We tried,
one of the guards was saying over and over, terrorized by the sight of the doctor as she was. All the blood, the almost surgical openings in the flesh. Everyone loved her as much as Gajarajan did.
We tried,
he stammered.
Why?
Gajarajan asked her softly, as he slid from the side of the gate onto the grass beside where they had set her, so they were both lying down. She turned her head to look at him.
That's just always the way in medicine I've learned, she said. The one who discovers something great always did so, only because some complete gandu they worked with refused to let them give up on an idea that seemed useless.
A tremor of pain ran through her.
Look at me, My team and I tried everything, every idea, and Temu just refused to shut up about that stupid elephant. And then you awakened.
Gajarajan smiled at her. The outline where his form met the torchlight ached in a great sinking pain. Dr. Avantikar tried to swallow. He could see her eyes going glassy.
This is the first time you've believed less in your power than I have since we began trying to rejoin Shadows. Maybe this patient is the one, and I'm the infuriating colleague who refuses to let you quit.
Gajarajan didn't tell her that the shadowless man had already succumbed to his wounds. The body flayed by the death kites until it had unfurled layer by layer, like red rose petals blooming out from a center spine. Dr. Avantikar wheezed, and he reached out and touched the shadow of her hand where it rested on the grass, beneath her shredded palm. Far up on the hill, he felt his body double over and shudder in agony, as the lines in her face suddenly softened, released.
"Keep trying," she said. "Do it for me."
"I will." Gajarajan let the faraway body writhe. It could bear the pain for her. The time it would have to was very short anyway. The man Dr. Avantikar had wanted to save hadn't survived, but Gajarajan had vowed to listen to what she'd said anyway. After she died, everyone who followed the rumors to New Orleans was brought safely inside, no matter what. The first shadowless to come after they'd buried Dr. Avantikar was the patient who now lay in the bed behind Gajarajan. This one he would not give up on, he'd promised the old doctor's headstone. Gajarajan would never know if it was because of Dr. Avantikar, or if it was just pure dumb luck that this patient turned out to be the first and only one he figured out how to cure. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter because he'd done it. It was possible. The second great hall creaked softly as the roof settled overhead. Gajarajan shifted forward until he was draped across the table. It was slightly more difficult at night, with only the moonlight and no sun or torches to help with contrast, but he reached across the surface of the wood until he felt what he was looking for, the thing from which he'd taken the cured patient's shadow, a tape recorder. In the old world, there would have been photographs and documents to compare. Persons would have had wallets whose driver's licenses could be entered into databases and matched instantly, as they had once done for his own body after the car accident that led to his birth. There was none of that now. All Gajarajan had was a woman who had arrived on foot, alone, who remembered nothing, and a tape recorder with fragmented thoughts locked inside. Jiang never spoke about his life before the forgetting, or even before arriving in New Orleans, really. The shadow thought of him only as Jiang, or the general, or the one who brought all the books. In the tape recordings, he was always called by his first name, and there was no mention of the others in his group, or Washington, D.C., or what he'd been doing there. When the shadowless woman had shown up at the gate, she hadn't been able to speak at all anymore. There was almost nothing left. Gajarajan spent weeks painstakingly analyzing the recordings to draw out what was needed, to make the recorder's own little square shadow much, much more detailed and complete than he had ever been able to do before. The most human-shaped shadow he'd ever been able to craft from something else, before he tried to take it from the thing and place it on her. It was nearly finished by the time Zhang and his army eventually arrived at the gates. Perhaps he should have asked Zhang more about himself sooner. But Gajarajan had always been bad with names anyway. He hadn't even noticed that almost every one of the Iowan soldiers had given only a surname at all, until Vienna forgot Zhang's and called him something else. "Ori," he murmured softly. He reflected off the wall back to the roof. The sleeper did not stir. There would be plenty of time to tell them both the good news tomorrow. "I've found your wife, Ori,"
Gajarajan said to the moon, Max is here. Mana's Amadi. That was a surprise. Neither one of them saw that coming. Not in a million years. The day after Vienna and V8 had saved the city from transcendence felt like a day out of time. They all wandered around, staring at everything that still existed, still was theirs. Shopkeepers neglected to open shops. Sentries didn't show up for duty. Zhang failed to unlock the library, but no one wanted to read anyway. They were all too busy just living, looking at lampposts, sprigs of grass, a smudge along the bottom of a wall from someone's boot, and marveling they were all still alive. The only thing that reminded Naz to do anything at all was her stomach. By evening, she and Zhang both were in House 33's kitchen, chopping potatoes from the community garden while they waited for their turn at the cooking pot outside. The stove was free, but there hadn't been any thunderstorms for a few days, so the wires that trailed off into the sky weren't able to catch a current. They were back to the pot and front yard fire pit for now. But Naz didn't mind. She hadn't had even a moment of electricity for 2 years. Having it for a few hours every few days now was like magic. Some of their housemates from the other rooms were laughing about something at the kitchen table. Zhang was dicing expertly, even one finger short. His hand had healed so well. The soup was Max's recipe. Naz thought maybe it was progress that he had suggested it. Max apparently hadn't been the best cook, but Naz was. She was still trying to decide if she was supposed to make it well. Would that impress him or seem cruel? Or not so well? Would that comfort him or make him even more depressed? I'm starving, she said just as a knock rattled the front door. Think it's Malik? Zhang asked as the knife paused. Maybe he came for dinner? She didn't think it was. Malik hadn't been up for visiting since Vienna had left for the sanctuary so Gajarajan could begin trying to make her a new shadow, or whatever it was that he did. Then they heard their housemates' surprised voices.
Oh, why, Gajarajan, what an honor!
Naz looked at Zhang. Surprise was etched across his forehead.
I didn't know he went anywhere,
Naz heard one of them say to the other as they came back through the kitchen and disappeared to their rooms.
The human part, I mean.
Zhang. Gajarajan's voice reached them then. His body smiled as soon as it stepped into the kitchen. Behind it on the wall, Gajarajan looked at Naz, and the grin lessened slightly. It was almost as if he hadn't expected her to be there. Hi, she said. Gajarajan bowed slightly, spread across both the wall and the counter. They waited, but Gajarajan just kept looking at Zhang as if unsure of how to proceed. Between the two of them, the shadow's human body waited patiently, vaguely facing her, but not quite. Naz tried not to stare.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about, Gajarajan finally said to her. It's a strange thing to see a blindfolded man walk as if he could see.
I'm sorry.
Naz managed to look away, to the shadow, and smile. Other than when transcendence came, I don't think I've seen you do it. She didn't say that it wasn't so much the walking, as that he never bothered to point the body in the right direction once he set it somewhere, in their kitchen or upon the altar.
Don't be. I use it so infrequently, I've made it into something strange. There's just so rarely any need. Is everything all right?
Zhang asked then. On the wall, the shadow nodded. The man did not.
Yes, everything is all right. It's better than all right.
Zhang relaxed a little.
Would you like some soup? It'll be finished soon. No, thank you. The body has already eaten. Gajarajan shook his head. I'm actually here because, well, I've discovered something very unexpected.
Zhang set the knife down beside the cutting board and turned back to the shadow. Naz watched, waiting for one of them to say something. The starchy water, slicked from the potatoes, began to collect at the blade's serrated edge as it rested on the counter.
"If it would be possible to meet in your room, that would be best," Gajarajan continued.
Naz put her hand on Zhang's shoulder.
"I think it might be best if Zhang and I met alone at first, Amadi. It's a sensitive subject."
That made Zhang edge closer to her, in a way that made her heart thrill.
"All three of us go," he said firmly.
The meeting lasted only a few minutes. It seemed at the time as if it had gone on forever, but the sliced potatoes were still sweating when Nuz finally went back downstairs, even though neither one of them wanted dinner anymore. Gajarajan still needed a few days to make sure everything was perfect, he'd said. On Ceres Day, New Orleans' eighth weekday thanks to wife Jane No Kid's old mistake, Zhang could come by any time. He would be waiting. Afterward, Nuz and Zhang sat outside on the porch, bowls of soup untouched beside them, staring out at the empty street. Everyone else was inside their houses eating. The rest of their own housemates hovered momentarily in the kitchen, one at a time, then escaped back to their rooms, sensing the danger.
"What time will you go on Ceres Day?"
Nuz finally asked.
"I think you should do it in the morning. Just go first thing."
"Amadi,"
Zhang pleaded. He looked more tired than she'd ever seen him in his life.
"I know we have to talk about it, but not yet. Just not yet."
Nuz nodded and turned back to what was left of the sunset. They sat that way in the quiet for a few more hours, just feeling how it felt to be the two of them together, side by side. She tried not to think about how it very well could be the last time. They didn't fight until they got up to the room, well after midnight. The One Who Gathers. In the courtyard of the sanctuary, swords clanged. The volunteers leapt backward into their ready stances again.
"Watch your blind spots," Malik instructed. "Faster!"
"You train them well," Gajarajan said against the wall beside him, as the volunteers sprang for each other once more, some striking, the others parrying. Farther away, he could feel the sensations in his body's flesh, the twitch of long unused muscles, microscopic imitations, in response to the sparring matches the Shadow's eyes were seeing.
"They're tough," Malik said. "They had to be. There was no room for mistakes in D.C., or on the road here. And you want to go back out there?"
Malik studied the volunteers grimly as they continued to train, arms crossed.
"You agreed my idea was a good one."
Gajarajan nodded. He thought of Dr. Zadeh.
"It is. I just meant, I was taught once by a wise man that sometimes people do drastic things in the face of difficult circumstances, a sort of coping mechanism. I worry this mission may be such a thing."
"Of course it is," Malik said. Gajarajan said nothing, waited for Malik to continue if he liked. He respected that, that Malik was a man who didn't shy away from understanding his grief, even if it made the pain sharper than if he left it as a dark, vague thing. It was a sign of true strength. Malik looked down.
I don't know what else to do with myself for the next few months, not being able to see her, and maybe never again.
"Vienna," Gajarajan began, but Malik waved his hand as if to dispel what the Shadow was about to say next.
"I understand there are rules," he said, "that what you do in the sanctuary is dangerous. Those rules are as much for your and the rest of the city's safety as hers," Gajarajan replied.
"I know," he nodded tiredly.
"It drives me mad. But I agreed when I let her walk in."
He leaned forward and stared hard into the wall where Gajarajan was darkly cast.
"But I can't keep sitting here in New Orleans waiting indefinitely. I need to do something.
anything. What Malik had proposed to him seemed like a death wish, but if anyone could succeed at this task, it would be him and his soldiers. He had come to Gajarajan the day after Vienna entered the sanctuary, shouting the elephant's name as if possessed, until the shadow flashed up onto the curved wall of the altar to receive him. The body was perched ready to stop him in case he lunged. Gajarajan had thought he'd come to try and take his daughter back by force, now that the reality of her absence had finally sunk in. But it wasn't